Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and ClassicFM.com. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1958, that Hank Ballard and the Midnighters recorded a song that became a moderate hit for them in 1960 and then gave rise to a dance craze in a cover of that song the same year. What was the name of that 1958 song? Was it A, Foxtrotting? Was it B, Cha-Cha-Cha? Was it C, The Twist? Or was it D, The Chicken Dance? A 1958 song that led to a dance craze. So what was that song anyway? And question number two, it was on this day, back in 1989, in Germany, that Melissa Etheridge and Joe Cocker entertained Germans. They were celebrating what? Was it A, Germany's championship victory in the World Cup? Was it B, the final Beatles concert? Was it C, the newly tumbled Berlin Wall? Or was it D, Ludwig van Beethoven's birthday? 1989? Germany? Celebrating what? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the 11th of November. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1833, that composer Alexander Borodin was born. Although known for such compositions as Prince Igor and Strangers in Paradise, Borodin's primary vocation was as a research chemist, and he was recognized as one of Russia's most brilliant scientists. And it was 85 years ago today, 1937, that NBC formed the first full-size symphony orchestra exclusively for radio broadcasting. The conductor for its first 17 years was Arturo Toscanini. Haydn's String Quartet in C introduces our classical music news. It's titled Long Lost Stradivarius Violin Stolen by the Nazis During Second World War, Found in France. After 78 years, the famed Lauterbach Stradivarius has perhaps been found in France after being stolen from a Polish museum in 1944. This is written by Sophie Alexandra Hall, published in ClassicFM.com on the 3rd of November, 2022. The Stradivarius violin is one of the most recognizable instrument maker names in the world of classical music, and for good reason. It is believed that around just 650 Stradivarius violins remain in the world, since these fine instruments were built in the workshop of the Italian family Stradivari during the 17th and 18th centuries. The instruments are famed above all else for their sonic qualities, which is reflected in their high price points for those lucky enough to play and own these historic strings. However, due to the high price point, this means there have been numerous cases across the centuries where these expensive string instruments have disappeared into the hands of thieves. One such example is a violin known as the Lauterbach Stradivarius, which was looted by Nazi occupiers in Poland from the National Museum in Warsaw in 1944. But 78 years later, there is a chance this long-lost looted instrument has now been found. An unnamed owner has come forward with an instrument that matches the Lauterbach Stradivarius. To legitimize the history of the instrument, the owner approached a French organization which traces looted instruments and musical material, particularly those that went missing during the Second World War. According to the cover story, experts have examined the instrument, confirming the violin matches the description of the missing Stradivarius. This particular violin is said to have been made by Antonio Stradivari, arguably the most famous of the Italian instrument-making family, in 1719. The name associated with this Stradivarius comes from the German violin virtuoso Johann Christoph Lauterbach, who was the instrument's owner during the 19th century. The violin had a handful of owners over the course of 200 years, but eventually found its way to the Warsaw Museum in 1939, when its last pre-Second World War owner, Heinrich Grohmann, died. It was reportedly stolen by Nazi looters when they came across the violin, along with other valuable musical instruments, in a hidden display case in the museum's chapel just 5 years later. The instruments had been stored here by the chief conservator of the Warsaw Museum, who told Polish government officials that he had hidden the valuable instruments at the start of the invasion of Poland back in 1939. The instruments, including the Stradivarius, were sealed in a double mahogany museum display case behind a wall in a church hall where the violin was later stolen from. U.S. military records confirm that a violin matching the Stradivarius's description was found in 1948 by American officer Stefan P. Munzig in the home of former SS member Theodor Blanc. The violin was reportedly taken into American custody and is detailed in records as the famous violin. The records suggest that the violin was transferred back to Hesse in West Germany. In 2008, research by the Polish Ministry of Culture revealed that the missing violin was never returned to Poland. Barber's Adagio for Strings introduces our jazz, blues, and show tune music news. It's entitled Music Inspired Powerful Emotions on the Screen, Just Like in Real Life. Here are some classic films in which music is so integral to a scene, it would be hard to imagine the scene without it. This is written by Gina B. Graher, University of Massachusetts, Lowell. November 2, 2022, myjournalcourier.com. The shower scene in Alfred Hitchcock's film Psycho, with its over-the-top horror film soundtrack by legendary film composer Bernard Herrmann, immediately comes to mind. Initially, Hitchcock thought the shower scene didn't need music, but Herrmann composed music for it anyway, which Hitchcock ultimately used it to great effect. The music from that scene, along with the rest of the film's soundtrack, served as a template for horror movies' music for years to come, and is an example of the storytelling power of film music. In my work as a music professor and researcher, I focus on the creativity and listening skill development in children. Having previously worked as an advertising music director, I've seen the effect music has on people's perceptions and emotions. Since the 1927 release of The Jazz Singer, the first commercial film with sound, music has been powerfully linked to the movie-watching experience. Film and music have always gone hand in hand. Even back in the early days of silent films, most movie theaters hired a musician or a group of musicians to provide music, mostly to drown out the sound of the film projectors and people talking. These musicians often played existing pieces of Western European classical music by composers such as Tchaikovsky and Wagner, along with folk and popular music. It was common for the same film playing in different theaters across the country to have entirely different musical accompaniments. Sound on film technology ushered in the unified soundtrack and eventually the practice of hiring composers to create original music for films. Like music written for an opera, film music serves to advance the story and the action. Just as an opera composer must follow the libretto, or text of the opera, a film composer needs to support the screenplay's storyline. The music also needs to reflect the screenplay's mood, which includes everything from the action on the screen to sound effects to dialogue. The right piece of music can enhance and sometimes even change a viewer's perception of what is taking place on screen. Just try to imagine replacing John Williams' Jaws theme during the first swimming casualty in the movie with a calm piece of music. In an instant, the mood would change from inherent fear to a tranquil swim in the ocean. As a music educator, I have made that music switch with middle school, high school, and college students over the years, and it never fails to surprise them. The power of music in film. Most of the time, music is used to underscore the action on screen, enhance the mood of a scene, foreshadow action that is about to take place, or even convey the interior emotion of a character. While composers and filmmakers don't usually want to overpower a film, in many instances, the emotional power of the visuals would not be as great were it not for the music. For example, one wouldn't expect to find the classical composer Aaron Copland on the same film credits as the rap group Public Enemy. Yet Spike Lee used this American Masters composer's music quite successfully in his film He Got Game. Right from the start, Copland's music sets the tone for a tense, emotional film about basketball and the difficult and complex choices facing a young up-and-coming player from the projects. The opening is a montage of slow-motion footage consisting of rural kids across America juxtaposed with urban youth. Copland's John Henry plays with its slow, expansive sound. This composition was inspired by the story of John Henry, an African-American folk legend who worked as a steel driver building railroad tracks and whose strength and speed beat a steam-powered rock drilling machine. The song recreates the underlying sound of the motion of a train with a rhythmic pulse underneath the melody, Every so often, you can hear a striking hammer, which is created by off-key strikes of percussion and strings or percussion in brass. The film sequence is edited so that the scenes of urban use mainly happen during these clashing hammer strikes. By doing this, Lee is highlighting through music the differences and disparities between the experiences of the rural and urban students. The opening credit scored with this evocative piece of American music set up the viewer for the emotional story that follows. In the film Platoon, an action movie about war, the film's composer uses contrast to surprise the viewer. Rather than the music of a military band or something loud and fast-paced, what you hear are the orchestral strings of Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings, which is playing in the background now. In this case, the tempo or speed of the music plays a large part in creating the desired effect. Measured in beats per minute, tempo can alter the feel and pace of what is taking place on screen. Composers designate a desired tempo using musical terminology that's usually in Italian. In this case, adagio indicates a slow tempo, usually around 66 to 76 beats per minute. The music is also in a minor key, which can convey sadness, another factor contributing to the emotional pull of this music in the scene. The result is a breathtaking commentary on the ravages of war. The next time you're watching a movie or even a favorite TV show, pay attention to the way a scene makes you feel, and then listen for its music. And in music research and technology, we have this, Books We Love, Do Re Mi with Julie Andrews. This is written by Megan O'Neill Mele, published in Parade magazine, November 6th, 2022. Nearly 1,000 years before Julie Andrews sang Rodgers and Hammerstein's Do Re Mi into pop culture history and the sound of music, a Benedictine monk named Guido d'Arezzo used these syllables to create the musical scale as we know it today. The beloved Oscar-winning actress, 87, has teamed up with her storytelling daughter, Emma Walton Hamilton, the two have co-authored more than 30 children's books, to tell Guido's tale in The First Notes, The Story of Do Re Mi, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, $19. Do Re Mi means so much to so many people. What does the song's legacy mean to you? Well, it's a universal theme of love and family and music and beauty. It identifies with The Sound of Music, which was only the third film I had ever made. I'm the lucky one who was asked to be Maria. So it's a feeling of gratitude more than anything, and it remains such a popular way to introduce children to music today. That's thanks to Rodgers and Hammerstein. What was most fascinating to you about Guido's story? That this monk created Do Re Mi by taking the first syllables of his favorite hymn. He was the first to conceptualize the musical staff and write the first musical notes, which in those days were squares and not ovals. It's fascinating how few people knew about his story. I didn't know about it. What do you hope readers will take away from the first notes? An appreciation of music, or perhaps a new curiosity about music, and maybe even about Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's a great joy and an awesome responsibility to write for other people's children. We hope that it's a good pleasure read or bedtime read for families, but it would be lovely for us as well if it were perhaps useful in music education.
So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And then good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
And in rock and pop music news, we have this obituary. Rocker Jerry Lee Lewis dies at 87. Jerry Lee Lewis, the piano-pounding rock and roll pioneer whose career was marred by scandal, died on October 28th in his home in DeSoto County, Mississippi. He was 87. He is ready to leave, wife Judith Brown Lewis, who was by his side, said shortly before his death. He said he was ready to be with Jesus. A Louisiana native who grew up in a poor farming family, Lewis was a relentlessly energetic performer whose raucous vocals skyrocketed him to fame in the 1950s on the back of hits like Great Balls of Fire and Whole Lot of Shaking Going On. That accent stalled, though, when word got out in 1958 that at age 22, he had married his 13-year-old cousin, Myra Gail Brown. The scandal derailed his career, though he later found success in country music. "I give the crowd what they want," he told People in 2017. "I just love music. I live for my music."
Moss grows fat on a rolling stone, but that's not how it used to be.
And in local music news, we have this headline titled, J. Cole's Dreamville Music Festival Returning to Raleigh. And here's how to get tickets. This is written by Colleen Hammond on the 2nd of November 2022 in the News and Observer. J. Cole is coming home, with Dreamville Records announcing the 2023 dates of the highly anticipated Dreamville Music Festival. The weekend-long celebration of hip-hop, rap, and R&B music is set for April the 1st and 2nd at Dorothea Dix Park near downtown Raleigh. Since the revival of Dreamville last spring, organizers said the event has become one of the largest music festivals in the state. More than 80,000 people attended this April. While the lineup for next year's event has not been announced, North Carolinian J. Cole will remain as curator of the lineup, as he has the previous two times. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day, back in 1958, that Hank Ballard and the Midnighters recorded a song that became a moderate hit for them in 1960, and then gave rise to a dance craze and a cover of the song that same year. What was the name of that 1958 song? Was it A, Foxtrotting? Was it B, Cha-Cha-Cha? Was it C, The Twist? Or was it D, The Chicken Dance? Correct answer, answer C, The Twist. As noted in a September 23, 2019 article by Jennifer Rosenberg in Thought.com, The Twist, a dance done by swiveling the hips, became a worldwide dance craze in the early 1960s. No matter where it started, it was musician Hank Ballard who first made the dance popular. Hank Ballard was an R&B singer who wrote and recorded The Twist after seeing some people twisting their hips while dancing. However, Hank Ballard and the Midnighters had a reputation for being a risque band. Many of their songs featured explicit lyrics. It was going to take another singer, therefore, to take The Twist to number one on the charts. It was Dick Clark, famous for his show American Bandstand, who contacted a local Philadelphia recording label, who in turn found Chubby Checker. On August the 6th, 1960, Chubby Checker sang and danced his version of The Twist on Dick Clark's Saturday night program, The Dick Clark Show. The song quickly hit number one on the charts, and the dance swept around the world. In total, Checker's The Twist spent 25 weeks in the top 10. The Twist dance was easy to do, which helped fuel the craze. It was usually done with a partner, although no touching was involved. Basically, it's a simple twisting of the hips. The movements are similar to those you would do if you were stamping out a fallen cigarette or drying your back with a towel. The dance was so popular that it inspired additional new dances, such as the mashed potato, the swim, and the funky chicken. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1989 that in Germany, Melissa Etheridge and Joe Cocker entertained Germans that were celebrating what? Was it A, Germany's championship victory in the World Cup? B, the final Beatles concert? C, the newly tumbled Berlin Wall? Or D, Ludwig van Beethoven's birthday? Correct answer, answer C, the newly tumbled Berlin Wall. As noted in the 2017 RealScreen.com review by Danielle Alson Lee of the documentary CNN Soundtracks, Songs That Defined History, Etheridge was in Berlin by chance when the wall was torn down on November the 9th, 1989. The musician had awoken to gridlock when the order came through and ended up playing an impromptu free concert in a large arena nearby to commemorate the historic moment. That concert featured a handful of German acts as well as Joe Cocker. She, Etheridge, ended up sitting down for another half hour and also ended up giving us some incredible home movie footage that she and her band members had taken that day. The author adds, suddenly it's this intimate new perspective on a critical historical event. How would we have known that she was at the Berlin Wall? It's not something she talked about a lot, but you always find those surprising moments in interviews. As a nod to our section on songs written for film, let's end today's program with Zooey Deschanel's theme song, Hey Girl, written for the TV series New Girl, which ran for 7 years. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.